Hey everyone, today's episode is part one of my CSKA trilogy leading up to the Final Four, and today's guest is Kostas Chatzichristos. Kostas is their strength and conditioning coach, and we go way back, but we obviously talked less about us, but more about him. And he told us about his background, about how he started off going from Greece all the way to the States to study at Texas, how he got his job at the University of Georgia, and then how he came back to Greece and worked his way up the ranks all the way to become the strength and conditioning coach at CSKA Moscow. We talked about how he earns the trust of his players, the communication patterns he notices, the presentation he does for the athletes before every season, and much, much more. We talked also about the EuroLeague Strength and Conditioning Association that just started off. Lots of exciting stuff. So please enjoy this episode. It's only an audio episode because we recorded in a hotel room. Also, please subscribe to this podcast once you listen to it. Give it a good review. Give it a thumbs up on YouTube. There's only going to be the audio file up there as well, obviously. So, without further ado, please enjoy Kostas Chatzichristos. Kostas.
In person,
man. We've been talking now for now. I think I ran out of words to speak, but I will gather myself.
Now,
so first things first, that's the third time we're recording now. So we've been chopping it up for a couple of times now, and the internet played a joke on us, so we had to come together and do it in person. So thanks for doing this.
I think that was the purpose of the internet, to bring us together, and you know, it just so happens that luck brought it too, that we traveled to where you are to play a game, so it all worked out. I think it's much better. Obviously, personal contact is much better, so I think it's going to be a I hope the listeners are going to enjoy what we have to say.
Yes, and we're in a safe distance from each other. It's a very good environment here where we're at, just to make sure that everybody knows there's no danger to either one of us. Kostas, you know, our timelines unfortunately didn't line up at CSKA, but we've met before. You came to train Papa Lukas when he was there, and we've had a lot of good conversations. You speak fluent English. You have a rich history of where you started, when you started training and being involved with the game. But where did you originally feel like this is my path? Where did it start towards basketball and then getting introduced to the strength and conditioning aspect?
Well, you know, I started off, I started playing basketball kind of a little bit late. I was about 12, 15 years old. I'm the product, I'm a kid of the 80s, where people probably don't know that in 1987, Greece won the European Cup that was held in Greece. We beat the Soviet Union. Younger listeners will be wondering what that is, but it was at that time the biggest country in the world and a huge basketball force. And we were just a small, tiny country that never won anything in team sports. And here we were, we played them in the final and won a two-point game, and all the country, this is something that never happened before, it never happened ever since, that the whole country turned into basketball. Basketball was a pretty popular sport, but football was the king, soccer was the king, and each and every one of us wanted to be the new stars. Like, we had players like Galis and Yannakis, we were all going to become basketball players. So I was one of them. So I joined a team when I was 16 years old, and it was kind of late. You know, you have to start early if you want to do something. And I just gave it all I had. I practiced a lot, and at the same time, I was, I think, smart enough to be following the university. I made it into the Greek university, sports science. So I was studying at the same time. I ended up playing until the second national league, which is, you know, the second most important league in the country. But right there around 22, 23 years old, I realized that I'm not good enough, I'm not talented enough, I don't have the physical abilities to become a professional basketball player. But it just so happened that I think it was 1993, I attended, it was my second or third year in school, I don't remember. But there was a big seminar in Greece, a big international seminar, and it was people like coaches like Pat Riley, Don Nelson, they coached there, and they came to teach. And I was part of this exhibition team. I was still a player, so I was part of that team that coaches used to show their systems, their plays, and mm-hmm. everything. So along with these great coaches was a strength and conditioning coach named Mark Rabo, then at the Golden State Warriors, worked with Don Elson. And it was the first time, I think, in Europe that we heard that term strength and conditioning. Mm-hmm. Now, that's the 90s. Now, people are laughing, but that's the way it is.
Yeah.
And I always liked to work out. I always liked to train. And believe it or not, I always thought that what we did up until that time, this running around laps and running in the force, were just not made for basketball players.
You felt it back then that was wrong?
Yeah. I mean, as an athlete, I had a great, let's say, endurance. But I was not explosive at all.
Yeah.
And I just said, why do we keep running laps
yeah.
when in basketball we have to sprint? And then I saw Mark Rabo and it's all kind of connected. I liked lifting. And back then, nobody was lifting. And then it was just a light bulb lit up. I said, you know what? This is what I'm going to do. And my life and my whole existence, I found a cause. I aligned to that cause. And
your
I said,
purpose,
you know what?
Yeah.
My purpose, yes. My goal, I want to... This is what I'm going to do. I'm going to become a strength and conditioning coach. I told people they didn't understand what I wanted to do. Also, what do you... So, it was not known in Europe at that time. So, that was the moment for me that I just knew this is what I wanted to do. I like working with athletes. I like training. And I'm going to become a strength coach, not a basketball coach, because that was going to be my path.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the aha moment for me.
So, but that was... all happening in Greece where you had this light bulb go off.
Yeah.
And then you still wanted to go to the States, right? Because you saw that the development there was much better.
Well,
you had a good school.
I was growing up. I'll backtrack a little bit. And growing up, my father passed away when I was 10.
Uh-huh.
And that was obviously a kind of tragic moment and a defining moment in my life. But... like everything in life, everything bad holds something good in it. And, you can find, it shapes you. Any bad situation, any bad experience, and obviously death in the family is one
of the
worst. It will shape you. And it will leave some marks in your soul, but it will also act as a booster for me to act as a booster. I matured earlier. I became stronger because there was never a dad to... intervene. I had to, first time I wanted to join a team, I went by myself. I said, hey, I'm Kostas, I want to play basketball. There was never a dad around. I was always by myself. My mother was always working and just to support us. And she did a great job for that, mentally. And
so you were independent early on.
Yeah, kind of independent. And the biggest thing was that, without a father figure, I was kind of left free to pursue my own path.
Mm-hmm.
Because... my father was in shipping. He was a captain. Mm-hmm. And then he went into shipping and my life would have been completely different than it ended up being. And I truly believe I find my calling. And I don't know if I would have found it if I pursued my father's path. You know how it is.
It automatically happens.
You kind of you get sucked into it, I think. I'm not saying it was going to be a bad thing, but I strongly believe that what I'm doing now, this is what I was meant
it's
to be.
Meant for you.
It's fulfilling. I'll tell you later how why I believe that. And just that shaped me and gave me an extra drive. And, that moment happened in that seminar and I just kind of, follow one step to the next. And I always knew, I was always schooled that, you know what, you should always study, get better what you want to do and leave Greece and go open your wings. That was my mom, which is rare because we're two boys and she was alone. And
yeah.
She said, hey, go pursue your dream.
Yeah.
So it all led, one thing led to the other. So I finished the army, and while I was in the army, I applied to schools in America. I got accepted to Texas, started on a spring semester, flew there by myself.
Mm.
4 days after I finished with my army, it's a compulsory thing in Greece. You have to go to the army. So hop on a plane, landed in Texas, didn't know anybody, rented a car. Had 2 days. To find an apartment and start school.
That's wild.
Yeah, I was out of school for like 3.5 years and didn't know anybody. I spoke the language pretty good. Still struggled a little bit at school because, terms and, studying biochemistry in English is not that easy. I just loved it and I just worked hard at it. And because I really loved it, I had a purpose. Unlike some of my schoolmates there that... finish their undergrad and then, okay, what are we going to do? We're going to do a master's. I just flew from Greece for one reason, and I was not going to let it go.
Yeah, yeah. No, thanks for opening up about your father. You know, it's not a given thing that people will talk
it's
about.
It's not, but I came to a point after all these years that I'm kind of comfortable talking about it. And then I was always pretty comfortable. I was never hiding, but I just came, the last few years, I came to the realization of what really happened and how that shaped my life and why I was a certain way with my relationships, with my insecurities and my strengths.
Yeah.
And because it's not all bad, but it just through work and talking to the right people, I just figured out some things. Because the good things you notice, and so I became so strong.
Yeah.
I'm
yeah,
so
yeah.
good. But you fail to see the dark side,
mm-hmm.
and that's what you got to address. But I feel that going through all that pain and struggle, and I you know, a lot of people go through that through different things.
Yeah.
It allowed me, and combined with my character, it combined me to be able to connect with people on a more emotional level.
Yeah, empathy.
And be more empathetic. And when somebody goes through something, whether it be an injury or lost job, I'm more able to
relate,
be compassionate.
Yeah, yeah,
you know, and
yeah.
I think that helps.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. Now, you know, like you said, following the father's footsteps, I'm thinking back with mine, like my father was a player. I always imitate them,
yeah.
you know, and then you were trying to prove them right. Like you try to prove them right or wrong, like whether they believe in you or not, but it shapes you and it automatically sets a path for you.
We have a lot of, maybe that path is for you. You never know.
Yeah, you never know. You never know.
I know now that I'm close to 50 that it was not for me. I'm not that kind of guy
going into that
business. But you get sucked in, and ask any 10-year-old kid what you're going to be when you grow up. Most of them will tell you what their dad is doing.
Yeah.
And that's not necessarily a bad thing, but when time came for me to pick, I just had one thing in mind, to go to the sports science department without even knowing what I want to do.
Yeah.
Because I like sports. That was it. I didn't like much else. I had interest in many other things, but I didn't really want to follow any other profession. So
right.
I was lucky because it panned out. It could have easily not, but that's how it happened. So, you know.
But that's, you know, like you're always looking for mentors, father figures that are, you know, that you can look up to and follow those footsteps.
Oh, absolutely.
Who were those guys for you in the States that set you into that strength and conditioning direction that, you know, led you to the path of great schools, great background where you had really good education and made you who you are today?
The funny thing is, you know, if you believe in God, you believe in God's hand, you believe in luck and the universe, whatever. To me, I remember applying. I didn't know. Now, again, this is the 90s. There's no internet. So younger kids or coaches or whoever is listening and they don't remember that era. So to find a university from Greece, you had to, you know, what do you do? You know, this ones that they have good basketball programs and you know. And what I was looking for was a basketball program, a sports school, and good education. So make the long story short, you got to go to this foundation, get a directory. That's a big old book. And you open it up, and there's the
yellow,
meeting addresses.
Yellow pages.
Right, the yellow pages for colleges. So you have to, you know, pick which ones you want. Then you have to actually write a letter and present yourself in English, of course.
Yeah.
And send it, and they will send you the admission materials. And I remember sitting at home, and then they came through mail, these big envelopes, and they send me, and then you get all these papers and the application forms that you have to fill in, and I got the one from Texas. It was the least fancy. It was almost black and white. It was burnt orange and white, no colors in it, being Texas now, I understand, but I remember I look at the program, I said, this is where I want to go. I didn't know anybody there. I looked up the professors. It was a top program. I knew that. And it was the first college to admit me. And it was the only one to admit me also on a spring semester. So I picked it. I didn't even open the other ones. That is karma for me.
Yeah.
Because I flew there,
yeah.
Started the program, went and talked to the strength and conditioning coach, Todd Wright. And I asked if I can go watch his program. Can I come to the weight room and see your weightlifting session? Said, yeah, sure, show up. Told me where to go. Went the next day. I said hello. The team was training, college team, University of Texas. I sat in a corner, watched everybody train, said goodbye. Said, when you train again? Said, you know, after tomorrow, that time. I was there again and again and again. So for the next month, I was going to class and I was going to Todd's. And he said hello and goodbye. That was it. I asked permission to copy the board because he wrote all the programs there.
Yeah.
And I went back home and just kind of started looking at it, studying at school full time. At some point, and one day he said, hey, I walk in, there's nobody there. I said, what happened? I said, we canceled lifting. Oh, I said, all right, well, can you help me clean the weight room? Can you help me clean this physio, the Swiss balls? And I remember I felt, oh my God, like I'm noticed, I'm asked to do something. So Todd is my friend and my mentor. He's the guy that took me by the hand and walked me into this world. It just so happened that he was a big name. I didn't know about that. He was an unbelievable person and a great coach, mm-hmm. with the meaning of the word coach. He knew how to, he was great with connecting with the kids. And this was my early influence, and I'm following his steps. And his general example, because obviously I developed through other people and myself, all right, but he's the main stamp, let's say, the main influence. And we became friends, directed me to where I had to go. And we have a connection, and I heard from several other people that, oh, I know you because Todd told me great things, and that's 20 years later.
Yeah.
So I can't thank him enough, if he ever listens to that, which I doubt. he was my big mentor. My professor at the university, Dr. Edward Coyle, big name in the ex-phys world, he taught me, what I got from him was the toughness. He was a tough guy. If he didn't like you, or he didn't like you, that's the wrong word. If you were not up to the standards of the program, he'll let you know and he'll dismiss you, say, you're not good, you got to go.
Yeah.
And he was kind with me and encouraged me a lot. And I'll tell you a story about that. And I learned from him discipline and the analytical thinking and how to approach problems. And his program was the first that showed me like that I was good enough to be in this world, because, you know, coming from Greece, I was a player, even in the lower league. I came to the States. I didn't know anybody. Nobody knew me. And I didn't have any bearings in this world. I didn't know if I was good enough to be here or not. And I remember this story that my first exam ever, I joined in January, so it's February, and mm-hmm. we're having the first exam in exercise physiology. Now, that's a demanding advanced program. And I'm studying. And first time we go in there to give the exam, and first time in my life, I'm stressing an exam. I give so many exams in my life, language, university, entry. I never had stress, honestly. I was going there, doing well or not doing well. I was not stressed. This time, I was sweating because I didn't know. What's going to happen? Made stupid mistakes. Like I was solving biochemistry problems, and I would go like 6 and 6. 6 plus 6 is 4, 15. And you know how your brain subconsciously looks at the paper? And he goes, something's off. So I went back and corrected. So that's finished. And a week later, or 5 days later, we get the results. And I remember walking up that big building that we're in, the department was in. I said, you know what? Self-talk, you know, whatever happens, we're going to keep going and keep trying. And I thought I failed. I thought I really did bad. And professor comes in, hands out the exams, and, you know, gives me a stare. I said, oh, that's not good, you know. And then I just lift up my little paper, and it was an A+. And I got the biggest grade in the class. Even my classmates were surprised. I was surprised. And then from then on, that was the first really, let's say, positive sign that, you know what, you know, you're working hard, you're good enough to be here. Then Todd encouraged me and so on and so forth. So in the States, these were the two biggest influences. Of course, you learn from everybody. Coach Felton, my first coach at the University of Texas, Georgia, when I got that job. Big experience. I was at, now it's called Exos, before it was Athens Performance. Mm-hmm. I was in their first facility. Todd pointed me to that direction. I got accepted in their intern program, which was pretty competitive. That's another funny story. Drove from Austin, Texas, to Arizona in August. Now, people that know, is plus 40 degrees Celsius, 110 Fahrenheit. My old Mercedes-Benz, 84 built, doesn't have an AC. Get this. Windows don't roll down.
Oh, my God.
The only thing that you can open...
Sauna.
is the roof. What do you call that on the roof?
Yeah, the loophole.
And when it gets heated, you gotta hit it. You gotta hit the ignition with a hammer to get started. It's a surreal thing that I just drove out there for 2 days. I was driving I-10 going west to go to and Todd told me in July. He said, "I can get you in. You don't want to go." I said, "Is that good?" He said, "It's like doing masters in strength and conditioning." Without thinking, I said, "I'm there." I didn't even think, you know, how I'm going to live there. Are they paying, or how I'm going to get there? Who, where I'm going to live? See, I'm in.
Tunnel vision.
Yeah, like it just. If Todd said I had to go, I got to go, yeah. And it sounded great. And I canceled my vacation in Greece, half of it, and I came back earlier. Just stayed in Austin one day. Drew to Arizona. Stayed in a house for another five guys. And one girl. We're all interns paid by Exos, mm-hmm. and just trying to live for 5 months without pay and just working hard. So, but Mark Verstegen was there running the place. Unbelievable coach, a great presence. And that was took my skills, I think, to another level. And so many good coaches over there. And watching Mark, such a powerful figure,
Mark,
and a leader. And Mark is really an example and a mentor for leadership. I didn't interact with him a lot, but just for him being there and seeing what he did with Exos was just amazing for me.
I mean,
and it's sort of interrupt you, but it set the standards.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a point that I think is worth making, because many times after that, I'll just be asking, "Hey, what do you think about this weight room? What do you think about this coach?" When you see Mark Verstegen and his Exos, or when you see Todd and what he's done, that the standards are pretty high. And sometimes you come across as arrogant, but, you know, I want to be like them if I can. I wish I could. And this is my measure.
You follow their example. You see how they're like.
That is good. Yeah. If you ask me if somebody's good, that's good for me.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
If the weight room is a good weight room, well, X has built the best one. This is the good weight room. So you have something to compare with and shoot for. So when I had the chance to build my weight room in Panionios or in Olympiacos, I said, we got to just quadruple the effort, because it's not good enough. Well, it's good. No, it's not good enough, because I've seen good.
you have a different bar. The standard is much higher.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
But you know, like these mentors. By the way, Mark Verstegen, like I was into strength and conditioning too during my playing years, and especially after I finished with my injuries, I had to finish. And I was getting into strength and conditioning myself. I was very interested in that. And Mark Verstegen was the first book I bought. And I bought it because he revolutionized German soccer.
Yeah.
Jürgen Klinsmann brought him. And they were all making fun of him because he was doing this. Yeah. Like,
it's like hiring a Saudi Arabia strength coach in Lithuanian basketball.
Yeah.
You know, but I think what happened was Mia Hamm, that's an American football star, woman, was training in LA. And I think she was married to Klinsmann. And that's where Klinsmann saw what they were doing. And he brought him over. And they revolutionized the whole thing. And they blew up after that because they got... They were huge in America because of the NFL.
But, yeah, and it was different, like band workouts, and it's completely different drills.
He brought all this modern sports training. I don't want to call it strength and conditioning to Europe. And there's a few other guys, obviously, that did a great job. But
for sure, there is. But I'm sure he paved the way for a lot of them. Because he changed the perspective in Europe with soccer is football, European football, is the number one global sport. And like it's uncomparable. And immediately on the big scene.
He lit it up.
Immediately.
Well, the thing was that the new generation of coaches like Mark and Todd and some other names in the States, they just figured out at that point that sports is not about, if you want to train a person that does sports, plays basketball, plays football, you can't only lift and run. You have to get this more holistic approach and teach speed and lateral speed. And it's not only iron, but it's also mobility, but it's also nutrition. And it's like speed work with the bands, a multi-directional speed and movement and all that stuff. Functional training started becoming a buzzword. Mm-hmm. Changing the old...
approach
of just lifting heavy weights or doing machines or going all out on the track and field. And I was lucky because I was in that revolution. I was in it. I met personally some of these great minds, and I saw how it evolved, the goods and the bads.
Yeah.
So, but that's when all this exploded. And I was fortunate because I came to Europe right at that time. So I was doing that in a world that never seen it.
Exactly.
So I was in the right time in the right place, coming back to Europe after the States, and talking about mentors. I don't want to underestimate the mentorship and the leadership of my future coaches. You know, Giannis in Olympiacos acted as such a person. It was my second year as a third year as a strength coach in teams, first year in Europe, and I needed guidance. And he was kind enough, you know, when I made a mistake, not to either be in terms of behavior or you know, technical, just to be like a father figure, because like you said, I was always looking for these figures. Older, let's say, individuals that will guide me instinctively. Coach Itoudis is a guy that will, you know, will teach you and get the best out of you. So they all acted as mentors. You learn from everyone.
100%. And and we're talking about Yanis Sviropoulos, who's Maccabi coach. Yeah. Dimitris Itoudis, who's the CSKA coach.
I should have mentioned.
I think that most people who listen, they would probably understand. Yeah. But I think that Yanis, I got to work with Yanis as well for 1 year in Moscow, and he was the same to me. And it's like, you cannot imagine a better mentor, especially for a fresh meat like me, when as coming into a program that I've never been around at that level, to show you the ropes, like you said, behavioral, political issues that you kind of feel like you have to handle yourself.
But he does it with a way where he's strict, and I love working with people that are
direct
and strict and direct.
Yeah,
I just love this guy. And some people hate it because they're intimidated and they feel that, oh, this guy is harsh, and I just love it.
Yeah.
This is what I need. I need you to tell me what's wrong and how to fix it. And Giannis, and also coach, they do it with love, because they'll tell you what the way it is, because you feel that they want you to get better.
Yeah.
They just don't want to reprimand you or put you in your corner. They want to lift you up. And now with Giannis, I was saying that he always, when I left, he always asked me when he saw me about, you know, what are you doing? Oh, I start talking about basketball. No. Are you married? What's going on? Are you going to have a family?
Yeah.
And he was interested personally, and not only basketball. And like I said, you know, you have to be, you're lucky if you come across people like that, like Todd, like Giannis, or people that care and they can push you to the next level. And I feel that we as coaches have to do the same if we come to that position, for people that are, for coaches and people and students that come behind us, and be open and try to help them, because I think we owe it to us, to our mentors, to the universe, that somebody helped us. We need to help other people succeed.
1,000%.
Yeah.
I think that's,
and that's very fulfilling too.
It is. It's probably the most gratifying feeling you can have when you help somebody else and you make a difference in somebody's life that you know they can benefit from.
I'll tell you a story that I strongly believe that. I see it as a duty, because it's unfair, and the Greek word is hubris.
Hubris. Yeah.
You know, if somebody wants your help and you're able to give it and you deny when somebody else helped you so much, it's like you're going to get paid later.
Yes.
You know? But I over the years, I've been invited and I've talked to many camps and kids and especially earlier. And even now, I go almost to every place. You know, I've been to places that you won't believe, just to talk to a camp that some obscure camp somewhere in Greece. I'll go, I'll talk to the kids, because you never know how you're going to inspire those young minds. And I receive emails, I receive texts sometimes, some on social media. Hey, you don't know me, but I know you. You came to our camp one day. I was 12, and now I got inspired, and now I'm becoming a strength coach. And I just did a live Instagram with one of these coaches. He was studying now in Serbia. That he wrote me a message. Said, you know, you don't remember me. You came to Crete for one day, and you talked to us. And from that day on, I wanted to become a strength coach.
So phenomenal.
Yeah, it's phenomenal, and it's also a message how to respect every moment, respect whoever invite you, and give your best. You never know who's listening and how you're going to influence positively or negatively, because somebody will say, oh, look at this guy, man. He's bored out of his mind. I never want to be like that.
Set a good example.
Yeah. And you might inspire somebody.
Yeah.
Mark Grabo inspired me. He came to talk to me. I bet you've never been to Europe yet. He didn't know where Greece was. Maybe. I'm not saying.
Yeah.
But imagine, he inspired me. So
yeah, it's
you got to be careful.
It's a certain responsibility you have in those in those positions, yeah, towards respecting your job, but also respecting the next generation. And that is,
yeah, because it's all one. You know, it's at the end of the day, if you help the industry grow or whatever you're doing, then it's going to come back to you.
Of course. And they come back and they can say, oh, this guy was never really, it wasn't ready to perform on that day. It's like basketball players come in on the, and they, like Michael Jordan was always ready to perform every night, night in, night out, because you never know who's watching.
Exactly.
And you never know who's going
to
take
it. And another thing, because if you're a coach and you're listening to that, to this, and that, a lot of colleagues, and especially in our world, they don't want to show their secrets. You know, they just, hey, I don't want to say something and people are going to copy me. And I got a story about that too. And they don't understand that you grow so much when you share and when you give other people whatever you know. You grow so much and you get so much more credit that nobody's going to threaten you.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember my first seminar in Greece. I organized the first strength conditioning seminar in Greece. And I was a little bit skeptical about if people are going to like it. It was great success. And what I'm going to say? Am I going to say everything? What I'm going to tell them everything that I know. And I called Todd. And I said, mm-hmm. Todd, what do you think? What should I just open up? He said, open up everything. And he said, open up, tell them whatever you know, and show them you're the real thing.
Yeah.
Which is kind of doesn't sound very good now, but his message was be open.
Yeah.
Hey, just give them everything you got and that's how you either do this or don't do it at all.
Yeah,
and I've been following that ever since.
Don't hide behind your knowledge. Like, don't try to maybe this guy, I'm gonna open up my knowledge, then he's gonna go and take my position. It's not about that.
If you're a strength coach and you're invited to talk somewhere, don't talk about bicep curls. Just say things that are meaningful and they're good and they're hard to find and they're gonna help the audience and the coaches that are listening to you.
Yeah.
Don't bullshit. There's no threat coming from that direction.
Exactly. Yeah, that's one thing to
realize.
Nobody
can copy your personality, your knowledge, your combination of experience and knowledge, and how you make sense of things. And that's where coaching is. Everybody knows X's and O's. You look at the EuroLeague game. A lot of coaches play the same things, but they're all different. So
how you reach the person, how you reach the team. Sure. So, but you know, looking back at the mentors you had, which are, I'm sure, great personalities as well. Is there one question that stands out that always popped into your head, or something that you wanted always to ask them to make sure that they can help you with? Something that you can.
It was technical a lot.
Yeah,
of technical
not technical, but more about the nuance.
The nuance. Yeah, well, I wanted to know how do you deal with certain situations with athletes, and
interpersonal level.
Yeah. But the thing that I realized and what these guys taught me is. It's very important to understand who you have to be to coach and not what you have to know.
Yeah.
Who do you need to become to be able to coach? And you have to grow out as a person, as a personality, collect experiences, and really work on those skills that are not technical in order to be able to communicate and be able to inspire. It's not about technical knowledge. It's about working with ourselves and grow us as people. And I followed that. And I have many, many things that Todd told me, and this is a common quote, I guess, that, you know, you have to, athletes always want to know that you care. They don't care how much you know, they want to know that you care, that thing. But this is where it is. I think that's the number one, the first step to communication and the first step into coaching.
We're going to touch on the communication aspect just in a second, because I'm fascinated. I studied communication by... like serendipity, really. Okay. I was not supposed to study it, but it's happened and just opened up a whole different universe for me. It was like studying psychology on a different level. And for me, it was very helpful. But before we get to that, which is very important, looking back at your career, now two-time EuroLeague champ, was there a time where you thought this is like a make or break moment for my career, like I grasping this opportunity, and you think like, man, either now or I might just not make it?
Well, more than one. And I think in all of us, you're every now and then in your life, you come to some crossroads and you got to either be lucky enough, like you mentioned, the two Euro leagues, and somebody make a shot and you win, you're prepared, you did everything you could, but yeah. still you rely on somebody else making the shot.
Or the most difficult putback you can imagine by Hryapa.
Yeah,
to some, force overtime.
Some magical appearance, because I saw that shot that Nando shot and you knew it was not going in.
Yeah.
You could tell yeah. right away. Yeah, you know, sometimes balance. You can yeah. tell it was yeah. just not going in. And then there's Victor.
right place, right time.
There you go. And he puts it back. And
that was the final four in Berlin for everybody.
Berlin for 2016. And many more moments like that. But down the road, there were moments that entering the university, these exams that I kind of slipped through. I was, I don't want to tell that story because it's long, but making it in the university in America, just getting through that, and those calls of accepting or not accepting a job. I accepted the job at the University of Georgia when I had already a good job working with Todd in Texas, and leaving the States and going to Panionios and Greece, my first job in Europe. That was a huge leap of big step, and it could have gone either way. But the thing is that I always took those steps and I followed 100%, never looked back. I went full throttle ahead, and failing was never in my mind. I always had this naive maybe expectation that I'm going to do great and things are going to work out just fine. And that's, I have another story about that. When I was going, before I went to the States, I finished my university. I'm driving down. I remember my brother calling me. My brother lived in London at the time. He said, "What are you going to do? Like, with you going to the States, what are you going to do?" My brother works in banking, has no clue what's going on in sports. I said, "Yeah, I'm going to go to the States. I'm going to finish this exercise physiology degree and work in the NCAA, come back and probably work in one of those Panathinaikos, Olympiakos." I swear to God, I knew nothing about anything. So that's how it happened. Like, I had a blueprint, then it just happened to work. I don't want to underestimate my work, but I got to admit, I was also a little bit favored by fate.
By the gods.
I was lucky.
Greek gods.
This is not a makeup story, and I remember when I was in Olympiakos, first time in my career, I felt it three times. Once, when I was in Georgia, my first month we practiced, and I remember I'm sitting in the middle of the court and I'm thinking, it can't get any better than this. I was making, sorry for the language, shit money, and struggling, but I said, I can't get any better than this. Then the second time I said it when I was in Olympiakos, which I left a safe environment for me in Panionios, stayed there for 1 year, came back from Europe, getting the Olympiakos job, big step. Everybody was telling me, don't go, because that was the first year they started rebuilding. And before that, it was 3-4 years of disaster. I said, don't go. I said, that's an opportunity. I have many stories about Big Sofa there, signing Big Sofa and all that, how that affected my life. And I just remember we're in Biella in Italy, it's a small town, people that aren't familiar, preseason game, sitting in the middle of the course. I said, it can't get any better than this. I'm in the top team in Greece, one of the top in Europe, and it can't get any better than this.
Yeah.
And the other time that I saw it, I said this was when we were in CSKA after winning Berlin and just kind of getting that stress away. I said, you can't get any better than this.
Yeah.
This is it. We're winning. So I'm blessed, because there have been moments in my life that I took that turn that you said in those make or break points, and it worked. So biggest make or break point was Big Sofo. I'm just going to talk about 1 minute. I was, when we signed him, I was with Yannis Feropoulos in the office of Olympiakos.
Mm-hmm.
That's my third day of getting the dream job. I just signed, getting the dream job. We're designing the preseason of Olympiakos. Phone rings. It's agent of Sofo calling Yannis. And Yannis hangs up and then tells me, yeah, well, look, we signed Big Sofo. Sofo, please call Yannis. And you got to go to the office of the agent and bring him here, we weigh him, and we get started. That was the one moment that I said, you know what? If this works, he's going to be great, because this kid needs a good strength coach and a person to communicate to help him. Or if it doesn't work, I'm done, because I'm going to get the blame. So, throughout
make or break moment.
If you're talking about make or break moment, that it can go either way, that was it, I think, because Sofo did a great job with great friends now. Good friends, and this sounded very Trumpish. We're great friends.
Great. Trumpish.
Well, we're good friends, and he worked hard, but it was a moment that if it didn't go well, it probably would have stalled my career significantly. So I'm grateful for the opportunity, and I'm grateful for him because he really did work hard for me.
So that's a good transition point, or like where we can leap into the communication aspect, because you mentioned communicating with SoFo. What challenges do you see today by communicating with players, trying to reach them? What cues do you look for? What are the things that stand out to you the most when you're kind of building the relationship and you have to get their trust? What are the things or tools that you feel like you have to trust to get there?
That's a tough one, but you know, after all these years, the most important thing, and for me it comes from heart, is that you have to care. First of all, you got to take your time. You can't just demand acceptance. You can't demand trust. You can't demand friendship. You can't demand that somebody will come in, that you go in, you walk in the weight room, and everybody is going to welcome you. So the first thing is, the right approach is, put your ego down. For me, that's important for the player to understand that you're there for them. Mm-hmm. You're not there to show up your skill or to tell them what to do. I think that era is gone. The era that I tell you and you do. And then through the first interactions and the first hours that you spend with the athlete, they need to understand that first and foremost, I care about you. And in my line of work, look, I care about your health. I care about your performance. Tell me about your life, and don't worry about basketball. We'll talk about it later. I'm with you. You know, just make them feel that these guys, he's not only, because they, like you said, they have a barrier.
Yep.
You know, drop that barrier a little bit, and we just, let's communicate like normal people.
But it's not fake. Like it's not authentic.
They'll figure it out immediately.
Yeah,
and I'm sure that that doesn't work with everybody that I've worked with. But my thing, be relaxed, be human. Show your human interest on what's going on in their lives. And I'm happy to say that down the road and through the years, athletes will trust you with their personal problems. They'll ask you questions that are not related to our work. And that shows that they have a little bit of trust with you. I'm not saying that everybody's going to open up and that you're going to be their guy, but at least you're going to be able to get your message through. And as coaches, if you know so many things, and if you can communicate with the athlete and cannot make them, benefit from what you know, because they're reluctant and they have a barrier, then all you know is for nothing,
yep.
Right? So that's what I tell everyone, that you have to work on your communication skills and try to figure out that way. Well, now is the second part, is that you're Benas from Lithuania, speaking, English. I'm Greek, from a white Greek guy from Greece. And here's another kid or another girl that she's from somewhere, downtown,
right.
So the inner city of some American city, let's say. Communicate. Okay, great, communicate. You got nothing in common. You don't have any common experiences. You don't have a common culture. You don't understand each other. So that now becomes a challenge of finding those common threads that is going to allow you to communicate. And there's a lot of misunderstanding right from the start, that most of it is subconscious. So, a lot of people think that you might be racist, or you might look at them in a different with a different eye because they're black, or you don't share those experiences that they had grown up and you had a completely different life. So that now becomes a matter of finding common ground, whatever you can find, whether it's sports. For us, it's always sports, because we, most of the time, it's sports, family, and that is also hard to manage. So, respect for where they're coming from is number one. Acceptance, unconditional acceptance from their world.
Yeah.
And I think the most important thing is to understand their values, and coach on their values and not on your values. So find out what's important for them, because we make assumptions. Very often as coaches, I think that we assume that we're all here for the same thing. That might not be true. Somebody might be here for the fame. Somebody might be here for the money. Somebody might be here because they're just been playing basketball all their lives. Some might, their whole existence is geared to winning a EuroLeague. But we assume that we're all here to win and we are here to do great. No. So you cannot coach somebody and tell them, we got to win the EuroLeague. And maybe that's not the number one for them, number one thing for them. Maybe the number one thing is to make enough money to provide for the family,
mm-hmm.
or I'm talking about or morals or God, and they don't believe in God, for example. So these are crude examples. You got to find what their values is, what is their what's important in their lives, and build on that.
Yeah, you can't come in with preconceived notions and expect that it's just gonna be the way you imagine it to be or the way it should be.
Exactly.
So it's a negotiation to a certain aspect, to a certain aspect. But I think that it's also like finding common ground. And like you said, sure, there's like different cultures. That's why it fascinates me on a team where you have different cultures coming together. And then you have to find just same lingo to talk.
And then the question is how you do that. One good, let's say, advice or experience is that you got to listen. You got to listen to the words. You got to listen to the body language. You got to listen to reactions. Pay attention. And that gives a lot of clues. If I tell somebody to do something and they make a face and they do it, I know they don't like it. Or if they go slower somewhere, let's say.
How do you handle that?
Well, you handle it by recording it and try to figure out what's wrong. And sometimes I, hey, what's up? You don't like that exercise? Coach, every time I did that, my back hurt. Okay, well, that's another thing I was getting to. Athletes are not open. They'll do what they tell them, what you tell them, but maybe they don't like it. Or you assume that they know what you know. And that is a great, I have some great examples of doing preseason. And, you know, in preseason, everybody gets tired and they're sore and they're slow and they're heavy. And somebody, a common friend that you had also as a player, is asking, do you guys know? So I try to explain to them what's happening and why we're doing this overcompensation. So he says, so you actually know that this is happening to us? I said, are you serious? Like, of course. Like, this guy, this professional basketball player, in his fifth year in Europe, didn't realize that preseason has that goal to overload you so you more resilient later on. Or nutrition. We talk about supplements sometimes. People didn't realize that, hey, you want those supplements because, let's say, you break down protein and you need more protein. We don't give you this protein to make you bigger. Why are we body fat? Who cares? Another player that we both knew, no. Oh, I guess somebody's interested to see if we're fat. I said, no, I'm weighing you. I'm taking a lot of information, taking body fat. I'm interested if you're losing fat and losing muscle mass, you're overtrained and maybe you need help. So the complete opposite. Now the athlete, instead of being reluctant and defensive and his body fat, he wants to get body fat because he wants to see if he's overtrained. Because we assume that they understand. They don't understand sometimes. Why would we take protein? Oh, because you break down protein. And you look at, and you know now he wants to listen. He's looking at you. Oh, what do you mean? Well, listen. So what I did in many years in CSKA, we didn't do it this year. In the beginning of the season, I give them a talk, a PowerPoint and everything. Put everybody in the locker room. 45 minutes nutrition.
Wow.
Said, yeah.
In the first masterclass,
everybody was shocked. Like, what are you doing? I said, I'm going to read out my PowerPoint. After that, a lot of guys say, hey, that was cool, man. That was cool. PowerPoint and everything. You're cool.
Awesome.
Because they ask questions. You can see that they were interested. Yeah. Because I say, hey, this is the protein. This is the amino acids. These are like bricks that build a wall. So when we give you amino acids or proteins, the same thing. It's nothing bad. This is what it's for.
I think that,
so now communication becomes easier, right? Because we assume that they understand what we're telling them. We assume that when they yelled at, they understand it's for their own good, where no, some of them don't, and they get in their own way. So that's what I'm talking about. You got to listen. You got to understand. Don't take anything for granted. Find out their values, and then things are going to get easier, hopefully.
Yeah, that's one thing that you want to help them understand so they can all help each other.
One of the things that Mark Verstegen said is motivation through education.
Yeah.
And it stuck. And that presentation, Exos did it with all the athletes. I said, that's a great idea. Because every time you explain why you do an exercise, people will do it 9 out of 10 times. I had guys that didn't want to squat or didn't want to do Olympic lifts or weightlifting exercises, the cleans, the snatches, these things, because they didn't understand why they had to do it. It looked hard. They were not coached properly, so it caused pain. And once you explain why we're doing it and how we're going to do it, and by the way, let's try it. If it doesn't work, that's fine. That it comes back to the point where, kill your ego. Your preconceived notions mean nothing. See what the athlete actually needs and do that. and
adapt, you know, adapt
and be a good salesman. If you believe in something and you believe that they should be doing it, find a way to convince them. And that way is just to explain why it's good for you. That works for me every time.
Okay, now, but let's talk about, because you work in a staff with coaches, obviously. How do you address certain issues within the staff that a player has without undermining the player's trust within the staff? You know what I mean? Like there's a certain accountability.
The strength coach is kind of in a unique position because you're in the coaching staff, but you're also part of the medical staff, mm-hmm. and your boss is your head coach and the coaches above you, but you run your own department, let's say, with your assistant, and so above of you got your coaches and the management. You have to do what, you know, they're your bosses, you have to give them the reports and you report to them, and your loyalties to them. You're with the same level, you're with the doctors, so you got to work with them without having an authority to tell them what to do. So you have to actually be able to work with people. And then you got the athletes who are above you and horizontal and below you. I don't know where you can put the athletes. So your loyalty is kind of to your coaching staff, but you cannot lose the trust of the players.
Right, because they...
Because after that, you're done.
Yeah.
Right? You just might as well leave. So many times players will tell you something knowing that you're probably going to say this to coach or because they're venting and they don't want you to tell this to coach.
You have to differentiate between
the two. So now you got to figure it out.
Yeah.
And after a few years, you kind of figure out which, if coach finds out about what you said, that's not going to be good. So he's not going to find out. You don't tell him that, you tell that to yourself. But sometimes there are things happening in the team that the coach needs to be aware of. And that's the tricky part because your loyalty is to the coach. And the coach is in his own, you know, stress and his own struggles. And when you tell him something, sometimes they don't filter it. And there's been occasions where you tell somebody, let's say a crude example, you know, Benas went out last night, he stayed late. So in the huddle, he'll call out and say, hey, and some of you guys are out and you stayed late. So everybody knows that you...
You just
told them. And I had I've been burned a couple of times. So now I'll make sure, first of all, I never say something to the coach that can actually harm a player.
Yeah.
I'll talk to the player and I find a way to just solve the problem or bring it to the coach in a way that is never harmful. And that's my rule, that coach needs to know, but I'm not going to harm the player. I got to find a way so everybody gets what they need to get, right? And I now with coach two, this, I openly tell him, hey, please just keep it to yourself. You need to know that.
Yeah.
Please don't bring it up because that will ruin.
That's a border.
That's the thing, because some player might listen to that. That's actually beneficial to the player because now the coach knows how to handle you.
Yeah.
If you're frustrated,
he understands where it's coming from.
And you wouldn't never want a coach to find out. Well, it's good that coach will find out in the right way because now he's going to resolve it. Right. So
I think it's about the context of when the information gets relayed to the coach to understand, okay, these relationships are important. But let me ask you, if the player is in pain, he's hurting, but he wants to play, he doesn't want the coach to know, but you know it's a situation, it's a risky situation
big conversation here, because nowadays we're collecting a lot of data and questionnaires and GPSs and things like that, and a lot of players are skeptical because they don't want the coach to know if they're tired. For example, they might think that coach is not gonna play them. They're not gonna play them, and then if they get hurt and they're in pain, they might think they're gonna sit them out in the next game. Or if they don't play well, the coach will blame them that, you know, you didn't play well because you were hurt. But there's a fine line, because we're professionals, and at the end of the day, we're responsible for their health.
Right.
And when I say we, it's the strength coaches and the doctors and whoever is involved in the physios and the rehab.
Medical staff and training staff.
So there's a fine line, because sometimes you know a player has a problem, but they can play through it. They really shouldn't, but they can. You know, it's not going to get too much worse, or it's going to be prolonged. And it's just a very, very thin line. I have a rule that if playing in a game will put you in danger of getting something more serious, you're out. It doesn't matter how much you want to play. If you have an injury, let's say an ankle sprain that is going to get more swollen, but you have to play that important game and you want to play and you feel that you can perform, then we might just, okay, well, let's all agree that it's going to get worse. Instead of sitting out for 5 days, you're going to sit out for 10 days. But because it's the playoffs or because it's the Final Four, you will play. Very rarely we allow somebody to play through pain if it's not a do or die game like the semifinal last game of the playoffs. And really, the health of the players is number one. Have there been mistakes? For sure. Have players overestimated their abilities and hidden something for us or downplayed it? Yes. Are we going to make mistakes? Yes.
And we're all human.
Yeah.
But the rule is judgment calls.
Yeah, the rule is we're never going to put a player in harm's way. Even if you want to play, we'll try to protect you.
Okay, let me ask you, let's shift to this next subject that I want to talk to you about your newest project and the your newest baby. You have you have several babies actually. Well, but your newest baby, the EuroLeague Strength and Conditioning Coaches Association. What is it about? What are the goals? What has the process been, or how has the process been, and what do you see? What do you hope to get from that?
Well, the EuroLeague Strength and Conditioning Coaches Association is a new association, and it kind of self-explains that it's it's all the EuroLeague strength coaches. We're 18 head coaches, and about 50% of the teams have now assistants, so we're more. And up until now, we have been talking before the warm-ups, meeting, saying, hello, hey, what's up, what's going on, exchange some stories, and that was it. And a couple of years back, we started having that need to, hey, let's talk outside the court. And we actually went for food or for a drink or for coffee with some of them. And it's strange, people listening to it, but we never interacted. So we're all in our world. And I started thinking that, I don't want to say that I started it, but it was something that was initiated by myself, the Maccabi strength and conditioning coach, Reggie, Fanan, and Lucas Fila at that time in Baskonia. And we went out in Tel Aviv and we said, okay, we went for food. That was the second time we met. And we said, you know what? We need to make an association. That was the fourth time we mentioned it. And I said, you know what? Let's do it. It was November. Last November. Let's organize a summit in Athens. That was last summer. It got canceled because of COVID. Mm-hmm. Let's organize a summit, a seminar, where we're all going to meet and we're just going to present the world and just create it. And it started from there. We started thinking where to do it. We said, okay, let's do it in Athens because it's easy access, infrastructure, this and that, European Union, easy travel. And unfortunately, it got canceled. But we kept on this September, and through chats and without really meeting all together because of the restrictions, we finally formed it. And we were proud to announce it last week to the world. And our goals are multiple. First is to unite and share our experience and our knowledge for the good for our players, our teams,
holding seminars or by holding like.
Well, we want to first of all get together and share our knowledge and our experiences. Make proposals first of all for the good of our players that we work every day, our organizations, and the league itself, just to improve the practice, our practice, and also what we offer to the players. There's a lot of things that could be improved by proposing things, by influence decisions if we can, working with ELPA, working with all the shareholders, our teams for sure, and EuroLeague. We just want to be a force of good, you know. We don't want to fight with anybody. We don't want to push our opinion to anybody. We just want to help the chief doctor improve the health and performance aspect of
raise
of
awareness. EuroLeague. Raise awareness.
And everybody's. I don't want to start naming names because there's so many people in the EuroLeague trying to do good. We want to be. We want to contribute to education. We want to create seminars, webinars, and educational events for other coaches. And we want to influence the grassroots, let's say, movement, if you can, like the younger groups, the younger coaches, younger players.
Up and coming,
just to get the better training and the coaches get help younger coaches with our experience. So education is huge for us. Improving our practice is huge. Improving what's happening in the EuroLeague is one of our goals. And it's a process. We reached out to a lot of similar organizations throughout the world. And I think that we, you know, with hard work and persistence, we can do something good with it.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Now, it sounds like there's a lot of benefits from that for health and health of the players. Yeah. Just optimizing the schedules, optimizing maybe travel. Maybe
put our input into that.
Yeah, you know, just having
just a different opinion of a group of people that work with the athletes every day. Work when on the good days when they work on performance, and work on the bad days when they're injured. Working with doctors, working with coaches, we're kind of in the middle. We have a wide view. There's some great coaches coaching right now in the EuroLeague. A lot of knowledge, PhDs, just a phenomenal group of guys. And I was very surprised now that we got to know each other and know the story and their education and their experience and their willingness to share. And this is just a new generation of professionals that are open. And I was pleasantly surprised by everybody's commitment to the cause. And it's just it's a team, and it's a team effort.
It's phenomenal to me how you manage all this stuff. Are you still involved with Performance 22?
Well, this is the thing. My first thing and first priority is CSKA.
Of course.
So,
yeah.
I'm not saying that just to say it. It's just I wake up in the morning, I take care of everything that is CSKA, you know, training individual players and all that. The thing is that I have a structured date. So I'll wake up in the morning and then I'm not going to waste much time. I'm just going to go straight into doing things. So there's almost no downtime. So I'll just stop working, put on my running clothes, go run, come back, shower, prepare lunch, go to sleep for 30 minutes or not, wake up, go to practice,
so
come back.
Nap is in your schedule?
I try to nap. I wake up not super early, but I wake up early, you know, 7 o'clock, 7:30. I'll just work through the day, do my practice. If we have morning practice or travel, whatever CSKA has, and I'll try to nap at noon because it gets me through the day. And I don't feel drowsy up until 11 o'clock at night if I take a nap. If I don't, you know, I'm not so productive.
Mm-hmm.
But I love what I do. I got a lot of energy. You mentioned Performance 22, which is a training facility and rehab facility that we have back in Greece. And I started it in 2012, and 2014 I got some partners, and it became from a strength and conditioning place, it became a rehab place. So now my partners are running it, and I do give it some time, but not so much anymore. You know, I'm away for like now 7 years.
Right. Yeah.
So, but I am involved. We do the calls and I give some stuff to the coaches. So I do a lot of writing. I have my own blog, do CSKA, do seminars. Summer is busy with training athletes and doing seminars, and I'm just staying busy. I like learning.
Yeah, that's, I mean,
learning Russian.
Молодец.
Молодец. Хорошо.
But you also have family and twins, if I may mention.
Yeah.
Of course, they're right now with the situation going on. I think they're not with you, right? They're not in
Well,
in Moscow.
That's the thing, that unfortunately we've been apart since August. Now they're going to be coming. So to be honest, that gave me the free time needed to do the extra work for the association.
Yeah. Okay. Yes.
With the other guys, and when the kids come back into life, it's going to slow down a little bit. But it's again about programming and not wasting too much time and just making the most out of the day. You still can do things. For example, when they first got born, first year and a half, I wrote very few articles. Because this is what I was doing in the morning. I was studying and writing and doing different things. And so I said, you know, the most important thing is raise those kids. So I did more videos because they're faster, or I wrote only in the plane. And it was a conscious effort and decision. Sorry, it was a conscious decision that the priority now is the family. And we got twins, and which is a lot of work.
It's a lot of work.
And I just
can't
love
imagine
not being with them. But life brings it like that, where maybe it's just a series of sprints. Now I have time, I have energy, I'll finish this, and then he might slow down and do only the necessary, which is CSKA.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you find time, you do it. But I still, like, I have a rule, I don't watch TV, I don't watch any shows before I go to bed, maybe from 11 to 11:30. I never, ever turned on YouTube, Netflix, or whatever during the day in my life.
Yeah, that,
I'm a procrastinator in a different way, but I don't.
I get it.
Yeah,
I get it. I think we do connect. We're both project men. Like we like doing projects. We like doing things. We like being active. I think I'm a little bit more scatterbrained because I like I jump around, multitask, boom, and I feel like because I don't have a family, I don't have anything that holds me accountable to a certain point where I have to be at a certain time. Well, yeah. It's on my schedule, so it's a lot of freedom.
The biggest motivation is a deadline.
Exactly.
If you have a deadline, my wife is laughing at me because I'm doing all these presentations or webinars lately, and it's just. Last minute, I gotta go talk to you for the last 2 hours. I'm starting in 2 hours. Say, you know, you never learn, you know, this is what it is. And I know myself, so I don't get frustrated because I know he's going to be like that. But I think it's about energy. And if you like what you do and if you're excited, you find the time because it doesn't become a burden. Like some friends of mine say, oh, you're always working. I'm not working. I'm having fun.
Yeah. Exactly.
No, I'm a little bit stressed. I like to go somewhere and have fun rather than write something. But writing something and working on a project is also fun. So it doesn't feel like work to me. But that's why I like it.
It's the same thing where when you go on vacation, I'm not a person to lay on the beach.
Yeah.
I go on a beach, but I want to do something. Yeah, play volleyball.
For a couple of days, it's good to chill. But after that, you're right.
You want to be active.
Experiences. Like, I think there's also research on that vacation to be, let's say, fulfilling and relaxing. It needs to last for 21 days, 3 weeks, which is great for everybody that is a boss and listening.
Yeah.
Give us more days off. I can't complain because we have a long summer. And you have to have experiences. You go to the same place every year, it's not as relaxing if you just go to a different place or at least have different you know experiences over there.
I think we both will agree if it's all right to do all these things and to be active because it serves a higher purpose. But as long as you keep the main thing, I think that you can manage around.
I think that's the biggest. I agree 100% with what you said. The main thing must be the main thing. And that must be very well rooted in you because to me it never changed. The main thing would, like for example now is my team. That's 100% what I'm focused on, and you know I leave everything on the side until I finish what I have to do. And there have been cases that I've been just doing that for a long time. I've just been doing the CSKA needs the whole time and not doing anything else. So the main thing needs to be the main thing. Otherwise, you're just not doing anything.
I agree. Otherwise,
just blow it all out.
Otherwise, you're just blowing energy.
Yeah.
So we're coming to an end slowly. Yeah. Thanks for listening through this.
I like talking.
I love talking with you. Yeah. It's very easy to talk to you.
Yeah. I like talking, man. You saw that. You keep talking.
I just have to throw hours. In like you get a couple of cue words and you just roll
just
with
like,
it.
I tell you that story.
So. To finish up, I know there's starting five is one thing, but I think it's much more important to finish with the strongest five.
Yep.
It's not always important to start with the best five. So I would like to ask you, what are the five things that you use or that you like that stand out in your mind, whether it's books that you read or that documentaries you saw that motivated you, some kind of life hacks or apps that you have used before that make your life easier and that make you a better professional and person day to day? Is there anything specific?
Well,
five?
That's a lot of... Okay, well, I talked to you about the people, and I think that, you know, you got to start... The most influence I got in my life was from people. My first... my mother, my first coach, his name is Menelaos. He's Greek. He's never going to listen to this, but I feel... He's the one that acted as a father when I was a teenager and obnoxious and... ready to fall under the cliff. And he's the one that gave me some kind of direction. Todd, you know, Dr. Coyle, Verstegen, coaches.
People in general. Yeah. People.
These people that really shaped my way of thinking and acted as examples. Now, books, I like reading a lot. And I like, obviously, there's a lot of choices. But I'll try to pick one book from each category that, like, okay, I'm not going to mention any technical books, like, mm-hmm. you know, Joint Structure and Function is a book that I go back a lot in our profession, but people probably not interested about that. So I'll start with a book that I read a couple of years ago and really summarized a lot of the questions I had, and it makes some great points. And it's called Behave. The Biology of Humans at Our Best and Worst by Sapolsky. It's a psychologist, I think, a researcher from Stanford. And he has also a YouTube channel. It's a great resource, a great thinker, and I strongly recommend, because you mentioned also YouTube channels. So I'll come back to that. One book that I read early in my life, it's from Marcus Aurelius, the Stoic philosopher. It's mm-hmm. called Meditations. Mm-hmm. A lot of short quotes and life thoughts, really influential book. Another book is The Better Angels of Our Nature. Big book, talks about how humanity is getting better and better and not worse and worse. Eye-opener, mm-hmm. Because we all think, oh, look at the world, is coming to world. He's making a great point that, you know, violence is going down, death rates are going down, and the world is actually getting better.
Yeah, yep.
It's a book that kind of like disrupts the...
Puts things in perspective.
Popular thinking. Another great book that I wrote, it's more related to biology and what we're living right now with the virus. It's called The Gene. Mm-hmm. Very well written, entertaining. And it talks about genetics, which we all dreaded in whoever studied this biological sciences. Really good book. I recommend it. And I'm going to close with a... Actually, that's going to be six books, but and a book that always touched me and always moves me is called The Little Prince by Exupéry. It's a French author. I think it's the beginning of the century. He was an aviator mm-hmm. and a writer. So the airport in Lyon is named after him because he was an aviator.
Okay.
He was a pilot. Uh-huh. One of the early ones, I think it was in the 20s. And that is a very sweet book. It's a children's book that talks about love and compassion, and it's a book that I read early in my life. I read it again, and it really touched me. And I recommend it. It's will get you back in touch with your kid, your children soul, and another book that is also allegorical. It's called Jonathan Livingston Seagull. I think the author is called Bach. Mm-hmm. And also I read it when I was younger, and it has a great soundtrack that my father used to play, so it kind of brings up the memories. But the book itself talks about a seagull that doesn't want to do what all seagulls did for thousands of years, and he wants to fly faster, and he wants to fly higher.
Be different,
and all the elders are warning him that he's going to get killed. So I'm not going to tell you what happened, but
okay.
That's a short read. These are books that are like really...
Left a mark,
and messed with my personality, and kind of, and this seagull thing, I think about it all the time.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Be like the seagull that everybody told him, hey, don't fly that high, it's not for seagulls, and he just did. He was trying to break his record every time, and people thought he was nuts. So
we're all a little bit crazy.
Yeah, all of us in our walks of life sometimes they told us, hey, don't do that, that's stupid, or it's not going to work, and but we went ahead.
Yeah, I have those voices in my head too sometimes, but I had people also who warn me not to do certain things.
Yeah.
I had people tell me not to do this thing, which I thought was, you know, it's challenging, but it's another challenge for me that I would like to accept.
Yeah. Well, the thing is that there's also, like everything, a fine line. You need to listen to the voices
yeah.
that warn you, because you might be about to do something stupid.
But you also can't listen to many, like,
exactly. What if you do it, then you know that what you did is stupid, and you learn. It's just and now as a father, I try to balance that and say, hey, how much freedom you're gonna give your kid to fail and
mm-hmm.
and be in danger before it becomes really dangerous and you stop being productive and informative and educational, and it becomes harmful.
Yeah.
So that antenna that we need to develop is, I don't know how you develop it. It's just something that comes with experience.
Intuition,
yeah. And now you said you throw a Q word and here it goes. But intuition, if you want to have intuition, you need to have knowledge on that field. So, for example, if you don't study quantum physics, you're never going to come with some kind of breakthrough in quantum physics. You need to have that background. So that's why all this, somebody might say, well, you're a strength coach. What about all these books where if you want to make sense of the world and other people, you need to have a lot of information that don't directly relate to what you're doing, but they create that perspective that then you can draw intuition from. I don't know if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Because intuition is like field domain specific. You can't have intuition about flying airplanes if you don't know anything about flying airplanes. If you study the human body, study behavior, observe and get that experience, then you might get a breakthrough. That's why coaches wake up in the middle of the night and draw a great play. Where did that come from? Well, they have the background knowledge to get that intuition.
It gives you a broader perspective, and I think that studying different things, learning from different fields, gives you also as a coach better tools to draw analogies, to explain to players in a different way of how things can be, how things like just to give them a different picture that they can immediately relate to without being that really about basketball, but something about life.
Exactly, because they also want to relate to something else.
It's not always robotics, it's not black and white.
You know, history gives a lot of examples of lost and won battles where what is sports?
Exactly.
It's a civilized... Sports, in my opinion, can be compared to civilized warfare. You see the reactions, the emotions, the aggression that goes into something that has rules, that has fouls, and has certain time that you can do that, and there's certain rules that you can be aggressive. Whereas in the past, probably was not that,
for sure.
Aggressive. I don't know if that, maybe that's a stupid thing to say, but, you know, sports expresses that aggression that we all have, that competitiveness.
Absolutely.
In a more structured, civilized way. That's why I think it's fascinating to play it and to watch it.
Absolutely.
People relate to it.
It's emotions.
Yeah.
Costas, one word for 2020. One word.
Unforgettable.
Unforgettable.
Highly educational. Difficult. That's three words. That's a lot. I can't define myself. But I'll just stick with unforgettable.
Unforgettable.
This is something that we're going to be talking about throughout our lives to our kids or whatever. You remember that time we couldn't go out and say, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
No, that didn't happen.
We probably still can't get out in 2040, but anyways.
Yeah, well, we hope we can, but...
Tell people how they can find you, Costas. You're highly available on the internet, but if somebody wants to reach you, where can they find you?
Well, you mentioned the social media. I'm on Instagram, I'm on Twitter. I have a website by my easy to spell name, Costas Hatzikristos with CH. If you just
.com,
yeah, CostasHatzikristos.com, and if you just Google me, Costas Hatzikristos Cesca, I'm on Facebook, I'm on Twitter, I'm on Instagram, like everybody else these days. I'm not a big social media guy. I'm not spending too much time on it.
But I see you always putting something inspirational on there. So I think it's worth a follow for sure.
Yeah. Well, I'll put something there if I have something to say. I'm not waking up in the morning and worrying about posting.
I shouldn't get anxiety.
Because like, I think that if you want to be successful on social media, you got to do that. But I don't care about that.
No. Keep the main thing.
Exactly.
All right, Costas, I appreciate you. It's been fun and always fun talking to you, and I'm looking forward.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah.
Good luck to your project. I know how much you, how much thought you put into it, how much effort, and I know all your, we talk a lot about if you should do it or not, or your hesitation, and I think you did a great thing, and, you're going to enjoy it, and people are going to enjoy it.
Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Bye. Bye, everybody. Bye.